Time is the one indispensable resource of accomplishment. Everything you want to do requires time. The only way you can get enough time to do the things that make a difference is by conserving time that you would normally spend somewhere else. You are surrounded by people and circumstances that waste your time and undermine your effectiveness. Only by practicing rigorous self-discipline can you free yourself from these thieves of time. There are 7 major time wasters in the world of work, according to hundreds of studies and opinion surveys. They are, in order, 1, telephone interruptions. The telephone rings and breaks your train of thought and interrupts you and distracts you from what you're doing. 2, unexpected or drop-in visitors, people who come in on you from your company and from the outside that break your train of thought and impair your effectiveness. 3, meetings, both planned meetings and extemporaneous or unplanned meetings. 4, firefighting and unexpected crises. Just when you get settled in, something totally unexpected happens that takes you away from your work, sometimes for hours. 5, procrastination, a major thief of time. 6, socializing. It's been said that as much as 75% of the time spent at work is spent interacting with other people. Unfortunately, an enormous amount of that time is just idle chatter, socializing, that takes away from getting the job done. 7 is indecision, especially with paper, correspondence, tasks, and people. It wastes your time, and it wastes that of others. In this session, we're going to give you several ideas to deal with each time waster, except for procrastination, which is so important, we'll cover it in a separate session. So let's review the keys to effective time management that we've discussed so far. 1, the psychology of time management, which means make a firm decision to become excellent at time management. Think of yourself continually as well-organized. Visualize yourself as efficient and effective and productive. 2, set clear goals and objectives consistent with your highest aspirations and your innermost values and convictions. The more goals you have, the more likely you are to manage your time well. This is called the law of forced efficiency, which says that the more you take on, the more efficient you will become in achieving your most important tasks. It also says that there's never enough time for everything, but there's always enough time for the most important things. So taking on a lot almost assures that you'll become more and more efficient. 3, create detailed plans of action and get yourself organized for productive work. 4, establish clear priorities and always work on your highest value tasks. 5, develop good work habits and learn to concentrate single-mindedly on one thing, the most important thing at a time. 6, think through and carefully plan large jobs or complex tasks that involve several people using everything else that you've learned so far. According to time management specialist Michael Fortino, over an average lifetime, you will spend 7 years in the bathroom. You'll spend 6 years eating. You'll spend 5 years waiting in lines. You'll spend 4 years cleaning house. You'll spend 3 years in meetings. You'll spend 1 year searching for things. You'll spend 8 months opening junk mail. You'll spend 6 months sitting at red lights. You'll spend 120 hours brushing your teeth. And here's the big surprise, you'll spend 4 minutes per day conversing with your spouse and 30 seconds per day conversing with your children. Now, in order to change some of those ratios in a favorable way, you're going to learn how to cut out the time wasters and to save time in every area of your life. To save time at work, for instance, you must continually ask yourself, why am I on the payroll? What have I been hired to accomplish? What is my goal or objective? What am I supposed to do? What results have I been hired to achieve? And is what I'm doing right now contributing to the accomplishment of my most important goals and objectives? But the most important of these questions is to continually ask yourself from the time you start work to the time you finish, is why am I on the payroll, and is what I'm doing right now what I've been hired to do? The greatest time saver of all is the word no to things that do not move you towards your goals. And here are 7 ideas to help you deal with the first of the time wasters, the tyranny of telephone interruptions. 1, use the telephone as a business tool. Get on and off fast. Don't socialize on the phone when you're working. When we're growing up as teenagers, the telephone becomes a social tool for us. It's our connection to our friends and to members of the opposite sex, and we become accustomed to spending a lot of time on the phone just rapping or shooting the breeze. However, when we become adults and we enter into the world of work, we have to break that conditioning or break that habit and condition ourselves or discipline ourselves to use the telephone as a business tool during the hours from 9 to 5. Number two, have your calls screened. Find out who it is and what he or she wants before answering. Overcome the tendency to be curious when people that you don't know or haven't heard of call you. Find out why they're calling before you take the phone call. Number three, have your calls held. Have periods of the day where you take no interruptions. Don't become a slave to a ringing phone. One of the best things that you can do is actually disconnect your telephone when you're working on something important. If it's important enough, whoever is calling will call back later. Number four, get and give callback times. When you call someone and they're not there, leave a message and the time that you'll be available to take the return phone call. When somebody calls you and you can't take the call, make sure that your secretary or receptionist gets a callback time, a time when you can get a hold of them, so that you don't play telephone tag back and forth. Number five, batch your calls. Use the learning curve and make all your telephone calls at once. Sometimes you can accumulate all your phone calls up to 11 o'clock in the morning and then return them all between 11 and 12, or accumulate them all up to 3:30 in the afternoon and then return them all between 3:30 and 4:30. Number six, plan your calls in advance. Think about a call as a meeting and write out an outline or an agenda for your telephone meeting or discussion, rather than picking up the phone and calling and forgetting why you're calling and forgetting the key things that you wanted to discuss. And finally, number seven, take careful notes of important conversations. Someone once said that the power is on the side of the person with the best notes. So never answer a telephone without a pad of paper and a pen in your hand, and keep careful notes of the things that you agree to, the things that the other person agrees to, the numbers, times, dates, and so on that are discussed on the phone. This can be worth a fortune to you in the future. Here are five ways to deal with the next major time waster, drop-in visitors. The first way is to specify a quiet time during the day for concentrated efforts. During this time, allow no interruptions. Get yourself a Do Not Disturb sign from a store and put it on your door, and make it clear to everybody that when that sign is out there, that you do not want to be disturbed for any reason by anyone except in an emergency. A second thing that you can do to deal with unwelcome visitors is to stand up when they come into the office. I used to work with a company, and there was a gentleman that would go around from office to office, and he was one of the most boring speakers, a very nice fellow, but when he came in, you knew that if he sat down, he was going to be there for half an hour. The instant that he came in the door, I would stand up and come around my desk as though I were just on my way out, and I would continue standing up until I was able to walk him to the door and walk him out, and I would keep on going myself. I'd go to the washroom or I'd go to some other office until he was gone, and then I'd go back. But it saved me an enormous amount of time that other executives were unable to avoid. Here's another thing to do. Number three, say one more thing before you go, and then stand up and lead them to the door. Another technique that some people use is they say, one more thing before you go, I want to show you something, and take them out of the office and show them anything. Show them a plant, show them a new picture, show them anything, but say, one more thing before you go, I want to show you something, and take them by the arm, lead them out of the office and show it to them, and then leave them there and go back to your office. A fourth thing that you can do in dealing with drop-in visitors is to arrange specific convenient times to meet. Make appointments with the people in your office, make appointments with your staff, and let them know at certain times of the day your door is open and you'll always be available. And the fifth point is avoid being a drop-in visitor on others. If you do drop in on someone else, always be polite enough to ask, is this a good time or should we get together later? And encourage others to say the same thing to you. Is this a good time or should we get together later? It's amazing how many people unconsciously waste the time of others and how many bosses unconsciously waste the time of their subordinates. The next major time waster is meetings. As much as 50% of working time is spent in meetings, either group meetings or one-on-one meetings, and by everybody's admission, at least 50% of that time is wasted. What that means is that as much as 25% of all working time is wasted in meetings of one kind or another. However, meetings are not an evil. Meetings are a necessary business tool for exchanging information, solving problems, and reviewing progress. But since each meeting costs the hourly rate of the people attending multiplied by the number of hours spent in the meeting, meetings should be treated as an expenditure with an expected value or rate of return on investment. Imagine you have 10 people in a meeting and the average person is making $20 an hour. 10 times 20 equals $200 an hour is the cost, the dollar out-of-pocket cost at least for that meeting. If you're going to spend $200 cash, which is what you're doing in this meeting, you must have a very good reason for it. So think through in advance, what is the justification for spending this amount of money, bringing this number of people at this number of hourly rates together for this period of time? Think of meetings as an investment with an expected return and treat it exactly as if you were spending the company's cash, because directly or indirectly, you are. So here's some ideas. 7 keys. The first is ask, is this meeting necessary? Many meetings that are held are unnecessary. There are other ways to achieve the same goal. Sometimes you can achieve it by circulating a memo, a conference call, speaking to people individually, or even postponing it to another meeting or another time later. If a meeting is not necessary, avoid it wherever possible. And especially ask, is it necessary for me to attend this meeting? And if it's not necessary for you, don't go. If it's not necessary for someone else to attend the meeting, make sure that they know that so that they don't have to go either. If the meeting is necessary, 2 is establish a clear purpose for the meeting and write up an agenda. In fact, a very good time management tool is to write a 1-paragraph statement of purpose for the reason for this meeting. We are having this meeting to achieve the specific objective, colon, and then write out the objective. It's a tremendous discipline. And write out an agenda with a list of everything that's to be covered in the meeting and who is expected to address that particular issue. Distribute the agenda, if possible, at least 24 hours in advance so that each person knows what they're expected to contribute, what the objective of the meeting is, and what will be discussed. This applies, by the way, to one-on-one meetings with your boss, with your subordinates, with your customers, with your suppliers, and so on. One of the most useful tools that I've ever seen is when I used to work for a large corporation, I would draw up an agenda for a meeting with my boss, where before we would spend an hour talking around in circles. Once we had an agenda, we could cover more information more effectively in 15 minutes than we used to cover in 60 minutes. I would just write it up by hand, photocopy it, give him one copy, keep a copy, and say, these are the things I want to discuss with you, and go down the list one by one, get resolution of each item, and then I'd be out of the office and back to work. And I can tell you that my boss really appreciated it because he was always willing to see me because I took up so little of his time. 3, start and stop the meeting on time. Set a schedule for the beginning of the meeting and set a schedule for the end of the meeting. If it's going to be from 8 to 9, start it at 8 o'clock sharp, end it at 9 o'clock sharp. The worst type of meetings are the ones that start at a specific time but have a wide open ending time. And here's another rule. Don't wait for the latecomer. Assume the latecomer is not coming at all and start on time. It's unfair to punish the people who are there on time by making them wait for the person who hasn't been able to get there on time. Many companies make the policy of locking the meeting room from the inside at the minute the meeting is supposed to start, and the people who show up late don't show up late the second time. The 4th point is to cover the most important items first. When you draw up the agenda, discuss the most important items first so that if you run out of time, you've at least gotten the 80% of the value out of the meeting that are included in 20% of the items. 5, when you're discussing each item, summarize and get closure. In other words, when you discuss an item, get closure, get completion on that item before you go on to the next item. Restate what has been decided upon and what has been agreed to with each item before you go on to the next one. 6, if you decided to do something, assign specific responsibility for actions agreed upon and set a deadline. Remember, a discussion or an agreement on an assignment of responsibility without a deadline is merely a conversation. Who is going to do it and by when? Who is going to do what and by when? And the 7th key to saving time in meetings is to keep accurate notes and to circulate minutes within 24 hours whenever it's appropriate. The person with accurate minutes from a meeting that you can pull out a week or a month later can resolve an awful lot of misunderstandings and assure that everybody stays on track with their agreed-to responsibilities and deadlines. Now, the next time waster is what is called firefighting, or dealing with the unexpected crisis. And it's a major time consumer both in life and in work. The way that you deal with these unexpected crises is, first of all, to engage in what is called crisis anticipation. Crisis anticipation involves looking down the road into the future and asking, what could possibly go wrong? And what would we do if it did? Or what's the worst possible thing that can happen 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months from now? What are the possible crises that may arise? One of the characteristics of great leaders throughout history is that they've had the ability to look down the road and evaluate all the things that could possibly go wrong and then plan for contingencies in advance. One of the characteristics of poor leaders is that they don't take the time to think of all the things that could go wrong, and then they become overwhelmed by circumstances. The recurrent crisis, the crisis that happens over and over again, is a sign of poor management and inefficient organization. It's very important that if you have the same crisis happen more than once, that you sit down and you look at your system and you say, why is this occurring, and take the steps necessary to assure that it does not happen again. When an emergency or crisis occurs, here are 5 steps to follow. Number 1, stop and think before acting. Remember, action without thinking is the cause of every failure. Calm down and remain objective. Refuse to react. Instead, just stop and think. Number 2, delegate action wherever possible. There's an old rule that says, if it is not necessary for you to decide, it is necessary for you not to decide. If you can possibly delegate the responsibility for handling the crisis to someone else, by all means do so. Not abdicate, but delegate. Number 3, whatever the crisis is, write it down on your list before acting. It helps to keep your mind cool and calm and clear and objective if you write down exactly what has happened before you do anything. The 4th step is to get the facts. The facts are perhaps the most important thing of all in a crisis. Ask questions like, what has occurred? When did it happen? Where did it happen? How did it happen? Why did it happen? Who was involved? Get the facts. Remember, the facts don't lie. The more facts you get, the more capable you are of dealing with any unexpected difficulty. And number 5, as we said earlier, develop a policy to deal with the recurring crisis so that it can be implemented by ordinary people. When a crisis occurs the first or second time, it requires the greatest intelligence and experience in the organization to deal with it. But if a crisis has a tendency to happen more than once, and you cannot put into place systems that eliminate the crisis, by all means develop systems so that an average person can handle it in your absence. Another major time waster in the world of work is socializing. Too much socializing can sabotage your career if you become well known for it. Remember, most people are time wasters, time consumers. They are working well below their capacity, so they have lots of time to socialize and fool around. So here's some advice. First of all, arrange to do your socializing at coffee breaks and lunch and after work. Whenever you find yourself getting into a conversation with people or socializing, say to yourself, back to work, back to work. Or break off the conversation by saying, well, I've got to get back to work. And it's amazing how much that expression will cause other people to get back to work too. Always be asking yourself, is this what I'm being paid to do? If my boss was standing right here, would I be doing this? If my boss was sitting right in that chair, would I be carrying on this conversation in this way? And if you wouldn't do it if your boss were there, it's probably not what you've been hired to do. Now, there's one exception with regard to socializing, is that relationships with knowledge workers are unavoidably time-consuming, but they must be focused on results, not on the latest football game or fishing or summer holidays. Relationships and communications and discussions with knowledge workers must be continually focused on the results that you and they are trying to accomplish. Socrates said something many years ago, we only learn about a subject by dialoguing about it. So therefore, in certain work environments, the time taken to dialogue about the work is an essential part of learning and internalizing it and getting the work done. Another major time waster is indecision or poor decision making. Indecision and poor decision making cost enormous amounts in terms of money and lost time. Now, a basic rule with decision making is this: 80% of decisions should be made the first time they come up. Only 15% of decisions should be made later. 5% of decisions shouldn't be made at all. Here are four types of decisions. The first is the decision that you have to make. It's a decision that nobody else can make, and it's a decision that has to be made. The second type of decision is a decision that can be made by someone else. One of the very best ways to build knowledge, foresight, wisdom, and judgment in your subordinates, and in your children for that matter, is to allow them to make important decisions. So whenever you can delegate a decision to someone else, whenever the negative consequences of a poor decision are low, by all means let someone else make the decision. The third type of decision is the decision that you cannot afford to make, the negative consequences of which are too great if it turns out poorly. Some decisions can lead to the bankruptcy of a company. Some commitments of resources can be so serious that they become irretrievable. The worst possible outcome is too serious to consider. So that's a decision that you cannot afford to make. And the fourth type of a decision is the decision that you cannot afford not to make. This is a decision to act on an opportunity where delay can be very expensive and the positive upside for you or the organization can be enormous. But remember the rule, as I said before, when it is not necessary to decide, it is necessary not to decide. So here's some other ideas with regard to decision-making. First of all, delegate decision-making wherever possible. Remember, once you've made a decision in any particular area, you almost invariably have to make all the decisions in that area. So avoid making decisions if you possibly can. Delegate them to other people. Second of all, if you can't make a decision immediately, set deadlines for decisions. For instance, if someone comes to you and they need an answer and you can't give them an answer right away because you don't have enough information, say, "I can't answer you now, but I will give you a decision by Thursday at noon." And then whatever happens, at Thursday at noon, make the decision. The third point, as we said a little earlier too, is get the facts. Get the real facts, not the assumed facts or the apparent facts or the hoped-for facts, but get the real facts. If you get enough accurate facts and information about any area, it makes decision-making far better and far easier. Most poor decisions are made because the person has made the decision and organized or committed the action without getting enough information. If you gather enough information, the better decision will tend to emerge. The fourth point is that decision-making requires courage because every decision involves a certain amount of uncertainty, and with every decision there's the possibility of failure. But in my studies, I have found that it's impossible for a person to advance in life unless they are willing to make decisions, that all successful leaders, all successful managers are inveterate and firm decision makers. You cannot imagine a person being successful who is indecisive and wishy-washy. In fact, a study that was done some years ago compared managers who got promoted and managers who did not. The managers who got promoted were managers who were decisive. The managers who did not get promoted were the ones who were unwilling to make decisions. And they took them aside and they gave them a series of tests and asked them what they would do in particular situations. They found that both of them were equally accurate in terms of their judgment on written tests. In other words, given the same situation in a written test, each of them was equally accurate. In other words, the decisions that they made on the tests were the same. The difference between those who got promoted and those that didn't get promoted was that those that got promoted were willing to act on their judgment. They were willing to make the decision and move forward, whereas the others were afraid of making a mistake, even though they were equally as accurate. Often, any resolution and any decision is better than no decision at all. And one final point is avoid perfectionism in decision-making. An imperfect decision made immediately is usually superior to a perfect decision delayed indefinitely. As we wrap up this session on time-saving techniques, here are five additional time-saving ideas that you can use. If you're in sales, plan your calls geographically and make them all at once rather than driving from one end of the city or one end of the county to the other. The second time-saving idea is when you go shopping, do it all at once. Don't shop at this store one day and that store another day. Go out and do it all at once. The very best time to shop, by the way, is Tuesday afternoons and evenings. Why? It's because all the shelves of all the stores have been restocked after the weekends on Monday. You can get in, you can get the greatest selection, and you can get out fast if you shop Tuesday afternoons and evenings. And bunch your errands. When you have errands to do, bunch them and do them all at once in a burst rather than one this morning, one this afternoon, and so on. A third time-saving idea is to ask, what do I do that wastes the time of others? Wasting the time of other people usually comes from not thinking about how valuable their time is or a lack of consideration. So ask yourself, how do I waste the time of my boss, my coworkers, my subordinates, my spouse, my children, my friends, and so on? And then make efforts to avoid it. If you're curious, go and ask them, what do I do that wastes your time? How could I change the way I use my time so that it would be more efficient for you? And don't be surprised if they tell you. Number four is be punctual. Only 2% of people are punctual, and these people are recognized and respected by everyone. Punctuality is classy. So make a habit of being there on time. Remember, if you're not early, as Joel Weldon says, you're late. If you're not early, you're late. There's no such thing as being fashionably late. It's really just being inconsiderate and disorganized. And number five, develop fast tempo. Move quickly. Pick up the pace. Remember, fast tempo is essential to success. The more things you do, the faster you work, the more energy you have, the more you get done. And the more and the faster you work and the more you get done, the faster becomes your tempo. You find that all successful people work at a higher tempo than unsuccessful people. They don't necessarily do different things, but they get more things done in a given period of time than the average. So they produce more, so they get paid more, so they achieve more, so they're more successful in every area of their life. Fast tempo is essential to success. Continually be looking for ways to save time by cutting down or eliminating the major time wasters. Only then will you have enough time to work on the goals that are central to your success and happiness. Only then can you become an excellent time manager. Procrastination is the thief of time. We've all heard that. The tendency to procrastinate is the primary reason many people lead lives of quiet desperation and then retire poor. It is not that people do not know what to do. Most people have a pretty good idea of the steps they can take to improve their lives or their work. The problem is that they continually find reasons not to do it today until it is too late, until there are no more tomorrows left. One of the most valuable habits you can develop in life is a sense of urgency, an inner drive to get on with it, to get the job done now. Recently, 104 chief executive officers were surveyed and asked, what sort of qualities would most mark a young person in your company for rapid promotion? They were given a list of 50 qualities and behaviors, and surprisingly enough, 84% of them agreed that two of the 50 qualities were more important than all the others. The first of the two qualities was defined as the ability to separate the relevant from the irrelevant, or to set priorities. Every manager has had the frustrating experience of coming upon one of his or her staff working away at something that is of low priority when something of higher priority is being left undone. Many organizations are overstaffed and under-efficient simply because so many people in the organization spend so much time on items of low priority. The second quality identified by the CEOs was the ability to get the job done fast, the ability to take the ball and run with it without hesitation or delay. Everyone intends to do good work, but the road to failure is paved with good intentions. I was at the annual convention of a very successful national organization not long ago where they handed out small, round wooden discs with the words, "To It," printed on the surface. They call these little discs round to-its, and they are handed out generously to people who are going to do something as soon as they get a round to it. Once they have been given one of these round to-its, they no longer have any excuses, or so the theory goes. If you work for an organization, or if you run your own business, or if you are in sales, and you develop a reputation for speed and dependability, you will never have to worry about being successful, being promoted, or being rich. You will be able to write your own ticket. The single biggest shortage among employed people today is called time poverty. Many people have the money today, but they do not have the time to enjoy it. Because of this, time is becoming more important to us than money in many cases. We will pay more money for people who will save us time, for people who will do things for us quickly. In fact, when we ask someone to do something for us, or when we call a company to supply us with a product or service, we have enormous respect for them when they move fast. We consider speed to be indicative of quality, dependability, class, efficiency, and excellence. On the other hand, when we deal with an individual or organization that acts slowly or responds slowly to our requests, we consider that organization to be of poor quality. We consider it to be run by inefficient and ineffective people. Toward the end of almost every contract in business today is a clause that says something like, "Time shall be of the essence of this agreement." Today, time is of the essence in everything we do. Learning to overcome procrastination is a vital step on the ladder of success. Without it, you simply cannot succeed at anything worthwhile. Here, then, is the psychology of overcoming procrastination. Here are 7 things you can do to program your mind with a sense of urgency. Number 1, set worthwhile goals that you intensely desire to achieve. A major reason for procrastination is that there is nothing that the person wants badly enough to get going, to get on with it. Many people procrastinate and delay because they really don't want to do what they're doing. Goals serve as a motivator. The more goals you have, the less likely you will be to procrastinate on the tasks necessary to achieve them. When you set a lot of goals, you trigger the law of forced efficiency. You find yourself irresistibly moving toward working more efficiently simply because you have so many things that you have to get done in such a short time period. Number 2, another way to program your mind for overcoming procrastination is to continually visualize the task as completed. Visualize the goal as already achieved. Imagine how you will feel with the job behind you. Imagine the satisfaction you will have when the task is accomplished. The more pleasurable the feeling of completion, the more focused you will be and the more energized you will feel. Clear mental pictures of a desired future reality sharpen your mind and enable you to concentrate better. For example, if you set an income goal that you want to achieve in a certain time period, and you vividly imagine how you're going to enjoy the extra money, what you will buy, where you will go, what you will do, you will find yourself being internally motivated to do the things necessary to achieve the goal. Every time you visualize, you increase the intensity of your desire and strengthen your resolve and willpower to do whatever is necessary to make the mental image into a reality. Number 3, use the power of positive affirmations to program a sense of urgency into your subconscious mind. At the beginning of each major task, repeat and affirm over and over, "Do it now, do it now, do it now." W. Clement Stone, who built an insurance fortune in excess of $500 million, has written that the repetition of the affirmation, "Do it now," was a key factor in his rise from a poor boy selling newspapers on the streets of Chicago to becoming one of the richest men in America, if not the world. Throughout his company, with branches all over the United States and in other countries, each morning the entire staff would stand together and shout out, "Do it now, do it now, do it now," 50 times before starting the day. Many successful men and women all over the world trace their success back to their association with W. Clement Stone and his motto, "Do it now." You can develop any mental habit you desire by repeated suggestions in the form of affirmations and mental pictures from your conscious mind to your subconscious mind. At a certain point, your subconscious mind will accept the new command as the new operating principle, and you will find yourself with a sense of urgency that is just as much of a habit for you as brushing your teeth. Number 4, another method that many people use to overcome procrastination is to set a deadline for themselves on all important tasks. Put yourself on record. Tell other people you will have the job done by this time. You will find that promising others motivates yourself. We will work very hard to fulfill our promises and to avoid disappointing others. Often promising others that you will have something done by a certain time and date is more powerful than promising yourself. Setting a clear, specific deadline also programs it into your subconscious mind, and you often find yourself impelled internally toward getting the job done. It is almost as though your subconscious mind will install an automatic override on your tendency to procrastinate. Number 5, refuse to rationalize or to make excuses for procrastination. All procrastination seems to be accompanied by rationalization, and rationalization is best defined as attempting to put a socially favorable interpretation on an otherwise socially unacceptable act. It is explaining away and making excuses for unproductive behavior. You will notice that people who procrastinate always have what they think is a good reason. So don't allow yourself the luxury of making excuses. Say you will do it and then burn your mental bridges. Refuse to consider the possibility of not doing it or the reasons you are justified in not doing it. Number 6, and this is a wonderful way to help you overcome procrastination. Create a reward system for yourself. Create a reward system for each part of the job as well as for successful completion of the whole job. It is amazing how powerful this simple idea is. You can actually program yourself into being eager to start a job and to continue with it until it's finished. Psychologists call this operant conditioning. Operant conditioning is when you are conditioned to expect a specific consequence after performing a specific act. For example, You are conditioned to look forward to the weekend after a week of work. That's why people say, "Thank God it's Friday." The weekend is a pleasurable state toward which one directs one's efforts during the other 5 days. It is, in effect, a positive consequence of the work week. Creating a reward system for yourself requires only a little imagination. For instance, if you have a big task to do and there are 5 parts of the task, give yourself a reward like taking yourself out for dinner or going to a movie or even going shopping once you've completed the task. Then, create a series of interim rewards. Give yourself a cup of coffee or lunch or a walk around the block or an hour of watching television as a reward for completing each part of the task. Pretty soon, you'll find yourself eager to move from step to step so that you can enjoy the reward that you've planned for yourself. Your focus of attention moves away from the difficulty of the task and onto the enjoyability of the reward. We teach salespeople to overcome procrastination in making prospecting telephone calls by putting a cup of coffee or a cookie next to the phone and then giving themselves a sip of coffee or a piece of cookie for every telephone call they make. It may sound simple and childish, but you would be amazed at how effective it is at changing behavior. And if you doubt me, I challenge you to offer to take a child to McDonald's if he or she cleans up his or her room. All evidence of procrastination in cleaning up the room will disappear. Number 7, program yourself to overcome procrastination by accepting 100% responsibility for the completion of the task on schedule. Look only to yourself. Rely only on your own ability. No matter what the obstacle, resolve to find a way around, up, over, or past whatever gets in your way. Refuse to make excuses. Accepting complete responsibility for results and not allowing yourself the luxury of a mental escape hatch is the equivalent of putting your own feet to the fire. It is amazing how much you will get done when you eliminate your opportunities to put it off. Here are 5 things to do in beginning any job. First, create a good written plan with each part of the plan and each step organized in terms of priorities. Put an A, B, or C next to each step. A written plan leads you into action. It gives you a track to run on and a blueprint to follow. Second, clean up your workspace and begin with only one thing, the most important thing, in front of you. A clean workspace is a real motivator to action. A good time management planner or system is very useful in this regard because it helps keep you focused. Third, remember, important tasks are not usually urgent, and urgent tasks are not usually important. Always start off working on the tasks that are both urgent and important. Start off with the tasks that have very short time fuses, then move to the tasks that are merely important but not urgent. Fourth, remember, you always tend to procrastinate on large, important tasks with considerable future value. Successful completion of these major tasks can make a real difference in your life. There seems to be a universal tendency to delay working on or completion of the task until the last moment. Some people say that they work better under pressure. This may be true, but it is always superior to have the job done well in advance of the deadline. Fifth, in beginning the job, learn to practice creative procrastination. This requires that you consciously procrastinate on those tasks that contribute little or nothing to the accomplishment of major high-value goals. Since you can never do everything that you have to do, you're going to have to procrastinate on something. The difference between effective people and ineffective people is that effective people procrastinate on those things that don't really matter, whereas ineffective people always procrastinate on the tasks that could make a real difference. Use your self-discipline to put off minor, irrelevant tasks in favor of major, important tasks. You have probably noticed that many small jobs left to themselves have a tendency to die on you. If you don't do them, you eventually reach a point in time where they don't need to be done at all. These are the tasks upon which you should creatively procrastinate. So ask yourself this question. What would happen if this weren't done at all? If the answer to this question is not much or nothing, then put it off as long as you can. Now here are 16 of the most powerful techniques ever developed to help you overcome procrastination in your life. Think about which of these ideas could be helpful to you right now in your situation. Number 1. Think on paper. Prepare thoroughly. List every step of the job in advance. Break the job down into its constituent parts before you begin. The very act of thoroughly preparing in advance has a tendency to help you overcome procrastination. Number 2. Gather all the necessary materials and all the necessary work tools in front of you. When you sit down to work or when you begin the task, have everything at hand so that you don't have to get up or move until the task is complete. This is a powerful motivator for staying with the task until it is finished. Number 3. Do one small thing to get started. There is a 20-80 rule that says that the first 20% of the task often accounts for 80% of the value of that task. This is probably what Confucius meant when he said, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Once you have done even one small thing to start the job, you will have a tendency to continue on into the task toward completion. Number 4. Salami slice the task. Just as you would never try to eat a whole loaf of salami at once, sometimes the best way to complete a major job is to take a small slice and complete it, just as you would take a small slice of salami and eat it. You have heard the riddle, how do you eat an elephant? And the answer, of course, is one bite at a time. There is a saying, by the yard it's hard, but inch by inch, anything is a cinch. Picking a small piece of the task and just doing it and getting it behind you is often an effective way to help you get over procrastinating. Number 5. This is called the Swiss cheese technique, which means that you select a 5-minute part of the job and do it. You punch a hole in it, as it were. Don't worry about the whole job. Just pick a part of the job with an identifiable amount of time required and then do that part. For instance, if you want to write an article or a book or read a book, you can break the task down into small pieces and just do one small piece at a time when you get a chance. Many people write complete books on airplanes or in waiting rooms or in snatches of time between other activities. If you wrote one page per day for a year, you would have a 365-page book at the end of the year. Number 6. Start from the outside and complete the smaller tasks first. Sometimes there are a series of things that you have to do in order to tackle the main part of the job. In that case, starting from the outside and doing all the little things will help you overcome procrastination and get you face to face with the big things. Number 7 is the opposite of number 6. Start from the inside and do the larger tasks first. Looking at your list of everything that you have to do in order to complete the job, ask yourself, what is the biggest single thing on this list? What is the one item that will take the most time or require the most effort? Then, force yourself to start with that item and complete it. All the other items will seem easier by comparison. Number 8. To overcome procrastination, do the task that causes you the most fear or anxiety. This usually has to do with someone else. Often it has to do with overcoming the fear of failure or rejection. In sales, it may be associated with prospecting. In management, it may be associated with disciplining or firing an employee. In relationships, it may have to do with confronting an unhappy situation. In every case, you will be more effective by dealing with the item that is causing the greatest emotional distress or fear. Number 9, a good way to overcome procrastination is to start the day with the most unpleasant task first. A recent study compared two groups of people. One group started an exercise program in the mornings. The second group started an exercise program in the evenings after work. The researchers found that the morning exercisers were much more likely to still be in the program 6 months later. They found that starting the day with exercise was much more likely to lead to the habit of regular exercise than putting it off until the end of the day when it was easier to make excuses and procrastinate. Someone once said that you should get up and eat a live frog first thing in the morning. Then you can start the day knowing that that's the worst thing that can happen to you all day long. Number 10, you can trigger yourself into action by thinking of the negative consequences of not doing the job or completing the task. What will happen if this job is not done on schedule? Both fear and desire are great motivators of human action. Sometimes we can motivate ourselves by the desire for the benefits and rewards of task completion. Sometimes we can motivate ourselves into action by thinking about the negative consequences of not doing the job. Number 11. Think of how you will benefit from doing the job, from completing the task. Write down all the reasons why it would be beneficial for you to get this job done on time. The more reasons you have, the more intense will be your desire and the greater will be your internal drive toward completion. If you have one or two reasons for getting a job done, you will have a mild level of motivation. But if you have 10 or 20 reasons for completing the job, your level of motivation will be considerably higher and so will be your persistence and self-discipline. Number 12. Set aside a designated 15-minute period during the day when you will work on your project. Setting aside a specific time period sometime during the day, say from 10 to 10:15 in the morning or 2 to 2:15 in the afternoon, and resolving just to work for that brief 15-minute period and not worrying about anything else will often get you into the task. To make this technique work, you must make an appointment with yourself and write it down. Then, when the designated time comes, have your tools and materials at hand, and begin the 15-minute work session. At the end of the 15 minutes, you may feel like continuing to work. If not, put it aside and schedule another 15-minute appointment at another time. Number 13. Since perfectionism is a major reason for procrastination, decide not to worry about doing the job perfectly. Just get started and work steadily. You can always go back and make corrections and revisions later. Nothing worthwhile has ever been done perfectly the first time anyway. A friend of mine had just started a consulting business, and he was telling me that it was going to be a month before he went out and made any calls on prospective clients. I asked him why, and he told me that he was waiting for his brochures, his letterhead, and his business cards to be done just right. I told him that his brochures, his letterhead, and his business cards would never get him a nickel's worth of business, that what he should do is to write his new telephone number on the back of his existing business cards or get some made up quickly and just get out in front of his prospective clients. I advised him that this would do him more good than all the brochures he would ever design. Thankfully, he accepted my advice, and now he is already doing business. Number 14. Pick one area where procrastination is hurting you. One identifiable area where you know your tendency to procrastinate is holding you back. Pick the most important area and conquer it. Set priorities on your areas of procrastination and then concentrate single-mindedly on the one area where overcoming it can make the greatest contribution to your success. Always attack the most difficult tasks first. Challenge yourself to confront the hardest parts of your work and get them done before anything else. Number 15, and this is something I've mentioned before, develop a compulsion to closure. Once you have begun to work on your task, refuse to stop until it's completed. Remember, if you can force yourself to start and stay with it and to finish even one important job, you will be laying down the foundation for a life of persistent, purposeful work. Force yourself to finish the last 5% of the job. This is the part that is worth all the rest in terms of personal satisfaction. The last 5 or 10% of the job is often the point where we have the greatest temptation to let up. It is when we can see the end of the job that we allow ourselves the luxury of relaxing or taking a break. However, the true sense of relief and feeling of accomplishment only comes when the last I is dotted and the last T is crossed. Number 16, the final key to overcoming procrastination is to maintain fast tempo. Fast tempo is essential to success. Work at a brisk pace. Walk quickly, move quickly, write fast, act quickly, get on with it. Consciously decide to speed up all your habitual actions. It is amazing how much you will start to accomplish when you push yourself to move faster instead of staying at your normal pace. In fact, if you continually force yourself to work hard and fast, you will start to experience flow. You will start to get an enhanced feeling of confidence and ability. You will start to go through enormous quantities of work in a much shorter period of time than you've done in the past. All effective people enjoy this mysterious flow of energy on a regular basis, and it comes from deliberately speeding up the tempo of your work and keeping at it until you lift off. In conclusion, this has been one of the most important sessions in this entire program on time management. It takes courage and self-discipline to break the habit of procrastination. The rewards, however, are great. They are self-esteem, self-confidence, pride, and lifelong success. You can do it if you put your mind to it. No other decision will be more life-enhancing and satisfying than the decision to do it now. Do it now. Do it now.